Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaritamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 53. He wears a garland of fragrant forest flowers on his neck. This garland is made of wonderful flowers like kadamba, lotus, and cotton tree, and also new buds and leaves from the tulsi plant. While embracing his neck, this garland devotedly reaches down to his lotus feet. With a desire to drink its honey, the bumblebees are attracted to it. A garland of gunja is beautifying his neck, and it appears that all the stars have assembled there with a desire to constantly serve his moon-like face. The nectarine smile on his copper-colored lips is situated on his greatly effulgent face, and it appears that he is emitting his heart's ecstasy on the pretext of smiling. His cheeks are illuminated by the effulgence of his golden earrings, which are bedecked with jewels. His eyes are like wide blooming lotus flowers, and his eyebrows are decorated with crooked glances. On the tip of his beautifully raised nose is situated a high, bright pearl. On his forehead is the mark of tilak mixed with musk and cow urine.
That means gorochana. Gorochana is when you take the cow urine and you dry it. And so then there's a bright yellow powder that's left. So musk and gorochana.
He wears a shining jeweled crown on his head. His head is decorated with soft curly hairs, and he wears a peacock feather on his crown. Standing in a bending posture, he is happily manipulating his fingers on the holes of his flute and filling the flute with the nectar of his lips. He is a fresh youth, expert in numerous arts. He defeats Kamadev by his beauty. He is the abode of sweet pastimes, the ocean of enjoyment, the ocean of transcendental happiness, the ocean of transcendental mellows, the only abode of compassion, and the only Lord for pleasing the three worlds. Right, so up to now is then the situation, and then himself has been explained. Right? And then within that explanation, then we see it also is discussing all these different elements, but in a poetic fashion, right? So that the different interactions are also taking on particular qualities. He is a fret. Oh, okay. Now the others. The gopis' restless blue eyes are like bees, which are always relishing the honey from his lotus eyes. And he is also happy by relishing the nectar from their lips. He is surrounded by the cowherd boys, who are equal to him in age, beauty, decorations, qualities, speech, characteristics, and flute playing. On hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, the oxen and white cows continue holding morsels of grass in their mouths, and they look at him without blinking their eyes. The calves continue drinking milk from the udders of their mothers, while the mothers slowly approach and surround the Lord in four directions. One should meditate on Sri Krishna, whose bodily color is like a new cloud, whose lotus feet are in harmony with his pastimes, who possesses a threefold bending form, who has a smiling face, whose earrings swing to and fro, who holds a flute in one hand and places his other hand in the hand of Sri Radhika, In this way, he dances in the midst of the gopis who dance and clap their hands. In this way, intelligent persons should meditate upon the Supersoul, Lord Vasudeva, who is situated in their own heart and in the heart of everyone. Those who constantly absorb their minds on the form of Lord Sri Hari, who drink the nectar of his holy names that are attributed to him according to his various pastimes and qualities, and who become fully satisfied by the ever-increasing nectarian bliss, will never again be burnt by the fire of material miseries. Those persons who constantly remember Sri Hari in this way will be devoid of all miseries. Their heart will be absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. The senses will be conquered. They will be faithful. They will become maddened by ecstatic love. No questions.
Why is he given the level of meditation on the Supersoul?
No, it's not on the Supersoul, it's on Krishna. Yeah, it means the Lord in the heart. It says, in this way, meditate upon the Supersoul, Lord Vasudeva, who is situated in their own heart. So the Lord is situated in your heart, but you don't interact with them or only interact with... See, it's, we are interacting, everybody's interacting with the Lord. There's no question that everybody's not. You can't function without interacting with the Lord. And Krishna says, as you surrender, that's how he reciprocates. Right? So how are we interacting with the Lord? On what basis? In our day-to-day life. Meditation. That's pretty good. Anyone else? Chanting.
Hearing.
Okay, well, you guys are doing pretty good. So,
as Supersoul.
As Supersoul. Okay, but why Supersoul?
Because he's sanctioning our desires.
He's sanctioning your desires, and our desires are in connection with?
Well, that depends. Usually the material world.
Yes, okay, so the material world. So, and we're seeing the dead matter, but it's actually functioning because Krishna's entered it. So the universal form is what we're actually interacting with. The universal form is Kiradakshay Vishnu. Right? So because we're dealing with the world thinking that, you know, okay, this is a rock. But the rockness is Krishna. Right? And so whether you recognize it or not, that's how we're dealing. So he's Paramatma as four-armed Vasudev. Right? But it's still Krishna, because that's how you reciprocate. You reciprocate with him as Krishna, then he appears as Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
So this kind of approach to meditation differs from those who are on the level of bhava and prema.
This differs from the level of those on bhava or prema. Which differs?
All these descriptions.
Why would it be different? What's described here is that.
Okay, so they still conceive of Krishna as a super soul.
I think you're really missing the point. Like by... Krishna says, as you surrender, he reciprocates, right? So our surrender is dealing with Krishna in as rules and regulations. So right there, that's Lord Vishnu. So therefore, he appears in the heart with four arms. Right? The devotees in Vrindavan, they see him as two-armed form, as has been described in these meditations. So how does he appear to them?
Two-armed.
Right. So the point is here Supersoul simply means his location within the heart. So you see him as Vishnu, he appears as Vishnu. You see him as Krishna, he appears as Krishna. Okay. So that's the point. Yeah.
The fourth paragraph, talking about the four
You need exact details or what?
Something
they're
saying, or just, you know, the...
Anything that's coming from their lips is good. Okay. Yes.
From this chapter, should we understand that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had more qualified audience than nowadays?
It is a possibility. But he's also, all levels are being explained. See, Adnana describes the symptoms of smarana. So you might meditate like this during your puja in the morning, and then the rest of the day, you know, by sitting and doing very nicely, like that. But someone else will just be doing that spontaneously. Jai. Does that make sense? But all things have to be explained. You know, like in Bhagavatam, you have the universal form explained in second canto and the pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan in tenth canto. Right? So everything's there for everybody, but according to your level, then you apply yourself. Does that make sense? Just like it says, you know, he wants to chant and hear. So how much do we chant, how much do we hear? But still, the instruction's valid. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, is that a universal form that the living entities are interacting with? Is that all? The feminine nature as pradyumna and the secondary creation, that the living entities interact with Krishna through the Lakshmi?
Means you're getting both, because the universal form is the masculine and feminine person. That's why it's called Virat. Virat is half male, half female. Right? So then Brahma is born from Virat. Right, because he's born on the lotus flower. The lotus flower is Virat. Right? Because you have the quality that's there, but then you have the forms that manifest the quality. Right? So the quality is Krishna, the forms and activities that manifest the quality, that's Lakshmi. Okay? Because you never have one without the other. Serving the lotus feet of Sri Hari. The author now describes the symptoms of serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Worshipping Sri Krishna with opulent ingredients for his pleasure by those who are attached to this activity is known as Pada Sevana. Those who are fully absorbed in Lord Krishna and carefully serve his lotus feet day and night cross beyond the dark ocean of ignorance and obtain the most auspicious abode of the Lord, which is rare even for the great sages to achieve. Those who serve the lotus feet of Sri Krishna with full attention never again become absorbed in the ocean of material existence. They are never defeated by the threefold miseries, and they conquer the five kinds of distresses. Knowledge of the absolute truth automatically manifests in their heart. The lotus feet of Sri Krishna are served by those who are always steady, grave, tolerant, and devoid of pride in their own bodies. Right, so here are qualities necessary for Padasevana. Because steady, because there's always opportunity for it, that has to be taken advantage of. Grave means you have to be thoughtful, because otherwise how will you understand what is to be done? Otherwise, you know, because you're a servant, that mood is very much there. Tolerant, there's always going to be some difficulties. Devoid of pride in their own bodies, because you're serving, so you can't think that I am great, or I'm very powerful, or I'm good looking, or this or that, all these different things. The author now describes the process of deity worship. The devotees accept the deity form of the worship of a Lord, which is made of stone, wood, or metal, as being directly the Lord himself. In this way, without discrimination, they worship his lotus feet, which are meditated upon by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Those devotees constantly and opulently serve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord with various fresh ingredients. The Lord is uniquely situated on a divine throne within a beautiful temple. And his lotus feet are meditated upon by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Didn't we just read that? Oh, that was, okay, again. In the early morning, those devotees wake Sri Hari, who is sleeping happily. They chant appropriate mantras and prayers for waking the Lord and play sweet musical instruments. They perform, by performing various duties for his satisfaction, they serve the lotus feet of the Lord, which are meditated upon Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Those pure-hearted devotees serve the lotus feet of Sri Krishna according to proper rules and regulations by offering many opulent ingredients such as jeweled ornaments, exquisite garments, fragrance, sandalwood paste, tilak, kumkum, incense, and ghee. Those devotees cleanse the temple of Sri Hari, bathe the Lord, wash his lotus feet, offer him a throne, flower garlands, garments, ornaments, palatable foodstuffs, and beverages. They fan him, sing, dance, and play musical instruments, perform ceremonies, and put him to rest. In this way, they serve the lotus feet of the Lord, which are meditated upon by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So here we see is this deity worship. So we would say, well, what's the difference between this and archana? But notice here what's mentioned are the services, not the technicalities of the worship. So Padasevana here, the emphasis is on always rendering some service for the Lord that's appropriate for the occasion. Waking him, putting him to rest. You know, all the different things that would be nice to offer him, things to eat and wear and, you know, smell and see and all these different things. Does that make sense? So that makes up the Padasevana. Right? So archanam would be, you know, the process itself, the technical aspects of the worship that you do those very nicely. Here it's the attitude of simply rendering service. With undeviated attention and according to their capacity, the devotees constantly serve the Lord by making nice gardens. Now, that was the deity. Now, what's connected with deity worship, right? So that the broadness of the pancharatric system now is being brought in. With constantly serve the Lord by making nice gardens, building temples, digging ponds, making wooden beds and palanquins, and putting up canopies and white umbrellas. Right, so now all the paraphernalia for the Lord, right? Because you'll go out and sit in the gardens, you know, the temple is decorated nicely, palanquins and different things that he can ride around on, paraphernalia that he'll go out with, right? That you'll serve the Lord with. To please Sri Hari, the devotees hold numerous festivals every month. They hold ecstatic festivals on every occasion and continuously perform samkirtan. And so whatever can be done to make a nice arrangement for the Lord. In other words, you're seeing here Krishna as a person and what things you could do for him as a person. So that way then it's a constant festival, right? The daily, and then you're doing, you know, something bigger also as occasion. According to their ability, the devotees serve the Lord during the summer by placing him on a boat, by taking him out on procession, by applying sandalwood on his body, by fanning him with a chamra, by decorating him with jeweled necklaces, by offering him palatable foodstuffs, and by bringing him out into the pleasant moonlight. During the rainy season, they keep the Lord in an opulent place, bathe him with pure warm water, offer him puris cooked in ghee, vegetable soup, and cakes made with tasty condiments. Vegetable soup means your vegetable preparations that have a nice gravy to them, right? Because these, does that make sense? So that goes very nicely. Your rich foodstuffs, but also very wet, that kind of thing. It doesn't mean like a Western soup or something. We're not talking here minestrone or something like that.
When in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's like often mentioned that there's a Bengali word zup, S-O-U-P, or something like this. It refers to Prabhupada translates word wet vegetables.
Yeah, wet vegetables means you have major categorization of the vegetables themselves is based on, means you have how they're cooked, But that also goes along with how wet or dry they are. Because if they're dry, then there's certain ways to do that. If it's wet, there'll be slightly different ways of doing it. It means you could mix them, you know, but then you'll get slightly different. How you say? But it's still going to come out, the effect is dry or wet. Right? Your chacharis means that, it means your chacharis and chechkis means that you're making a chance, right, and putting the vegetables into that. It's a chachari if they have not been cooked. It's a chechki if they've already been pre-steamed, right? And so you'll end up with a dry, completely dry. There is no sauce. Any little bit that's there is completely stuck to the vegetable, right? Then your gantas means that there'll be a bit of sauce, but it's a thick sauce, but not much, so if you put it on the plate, it will just kind of stay in the vicinity of the vegetable. It won't move beyond that, right? Joles then will mean that it's very wet, so you put it there and the water may run across the plate, so you can't put it on the plate. These others you put on the plate and there's the rice. This you have to put directly on the rice, so that's why then all those other ones are served with dal, because dal's wet. But after that, you have the category of dal na, means no dal, because they go directly on the rice, because they're too wet to go on the plate. Right? And then your dalnas will be, it means that'll be your thinnest, your joles, and the others will be a little thicker. Some of them are very thick, or as you like. You understand? So those would be, you're like alu dum. Dum also means soup. But it's not a soup. It's a potato sabji with lots of gravy. Does that make sense? So it's just there is no Western equivalent, especially in English, right? It means that, you know, hot couture in England means you take the peas and carrots and boil them. And if you're a little bit more conscious, maybe steam them, and as they are, stick them on the plate. Right? And then you can spice them according to your individual taste with salt and pepper.
Marmite.
Oh, yeah, okay, Marmite. You want to get a little high-tech here or something. I guess you could throw in a little mustard if you wanted. Basically, that's kind of it. And since we're using, maybe in French they have some nice words for, you know, vegetables with various sauces and all that, but probably they would be more connected with, snails and other things. You get your really good terms and all that, you know, so. You understand? So, it's a problem. Because especially the Bengali cooking is so detailed and fine on these, you know, the way they do the spicing and all that, so. You don't have words.
So Lord Chaitanya appeared not only in the capital of learning, but also in the
capital of eating, yes. Yeah. When it comes to vegetables, I don't think anybody has as developed a science as Bengalis. You know what I'm saying? Like Punjabis and that side, breads, they really have a variety of stuff like that. You know, South Indians, your rices, and here and there they'll have one nice rice. But Bengalis just barely, you know, the plain rice, or you may make a pushpan, but it's there, and also sweets. They have kinds of sweets developed that most others do it off of, you know, you have your grains and your cooked down milk, you know, based off of like burfi, but here based off of cheese. That you don't have the other parts like that. So you generally see those things with the Bengali you see all over India, you know, like that. So it's you could say that. Vegetables and sweets, it's very developed. You know, the bitters and all the different kinds of things others don't have. They're just part of the meal. Like in Western India, they may have karela, but it's just served as one of the vegetables. There's no concept that it has to go before because of the bitterness. Or they'll work very hard to remove the bitterness, either by scraping the outside or doing something to get rid of the bitterness. Frying it, if you deep fry it, you get rid of the bitterness. So, this is what I mean. Means if look at just being practical here, right? Is that if it's a place of learning, that means it must be a place of Brahmins. right? And Brahmins, what do they like to do? Eat, right? So therefore, you have to have good knowledge and good food. They go together. Right? So if our temples are a place of education, what would that infer? Good food. So like that. So if you have good philosophy and good food, then you're going to catch a lot of people. And even if they don't know the philosophy, they'll like the food. Yes.
Maharaj, why is it that in our tradition you mentioned the bitter goes first and the sweet last? And,
the bitter first and the sweet last. Have you ever tried to eat bitter after eating sweet?
Yeah.
So did it work good?
I like bitter stuff when it's not fun.
Okay, I had one other devotee, Panchanavita, he'd do that. Eat the whole meal because he really liked the bitter. Because I think he used to preach in Mexico, so he couldn't. Didn't run across it much, so then like that, yes. So then when he would finish, then he'd go back to the shukta again. He really liked the bitter. Because that's the way the tastes work. The bitter then increases the digestion and everything like that. So that's because it creates fire. Right? Like that. While sweet, it's heavy, so it reduces. So it's at the end.
Maharaj, I'm not sure whether this is hearsay, but somebody said there's also a Vedic injunction that you can eat sweet first, and then that reduces the amount which you eat, and sometimes it would take a sweet.
If Brahmins like to eat, why would they reduce their intake? You know what I'm saying? So that they're trying to figure something out because they, in their own concept, is eating less, that's what's good. But the point is appreciating the prasadam, that's what's good. You know what I'm saying? So, have you ever eaten a whole lot of sweet on its own? No. And then after you do that, what do you feel like doing?
Sleeping.
Okay, that's there. But drinking water. Okay.
Coca-Cola to cut
through. Okay, that. Okay. any other reactions?
Having something salty.
Yes. Now that's the normal reaction. I mean, these others are reactions, but that means is the volume of sweet you ate was very impressive. So, but when you eat sweet, then it develops the desire to eat salty. So it has an effect on the eating process, you know, by taste, that by starting with bitter will do. You know what I'm saying? But it's more, how you say, it's more refined to start with bitter than to start with sweet. But it's a bona fide thing. You start with sweet and then salty, and then you end with sweet again if you're so inclined. Right? So when they do Brahmin bhojanas, they do like that. You have some communities, like in Gujarat, in Saurashtra, then they do like that. They start with sweet. But it's only those Gujaratis. The other Gujaratis don't. So you...
I mean, it's supposed to be in a small amount, right, at the beginning.
If you're doing a Brahmin bhojana, no. No, there it's how much you want to eat of the sweet, and then when you're done, that is how much you want to eat of the salties. Because they're done, it's generally it's like puri and a sabji like that or something. It's fried things because you're feeding Brahmins, it's nothing's kacha. Everything's pukka cooking. So that means, you know, fried like puris or, you know, halava, you know, fried sabjis, you know, all that. So there'll be no rice, there'll be no dal, there'll be no chapatis. These are all kacha. They're all considered uncooked. The Veda concept of uncooked means not cooked in ghee. What we call uncooked, Veda calls it raw. So salad's raw, not uncooked. Dal is uncooked, chapatis are uncooked, rice is uncooked. Because you put the ghee afterwards. Cooked means you put the ghee first and then cook it with the ghee. Does that make sense? Like a pushpana, that's cooked. The regular rice is uncooked. A paratha is cooked, but a chapati is uncooked. Like that.
Pushpana, is that rice?
Yeah, you take the rice and you put spices and fry the rice a little bit, then put the water and boil it, like that. Yes. Practical, I'm not so sure, but we'll discuss the concepts like that. Does that make sense? So it's just one of the ways of doing. So you can start with sweet, you know, and then salty end with sweet. But more refined is starting with bitter and then ending with sweet. Right? Others, they don't necessarily start with sweet, but they have it throughout the meal because what they cook is quite spicy. And so it gets a little strong. So then when you eat sweet, it cuts that and you're able to appreciate the spicy again. So the idea is that in South, they'll have it there, then, and you may take it a little bit in the beginning, just as a taste, because you have all the tastes there, and they put everything on the plate. So you start with that, you know, if you want to identify yourself with the Brahminical group. If you don't, start with whatever you like, you know, but they're watching, you know. And so then, also in South, the really professional Brahmins, when they're eating sweet at the end, then they'll eat so much sweet they can't eat any more sweet. Then they'll eat something very salty, like achar or something like that. And then when it cuts the sweet, then it cuts the sweet taste, then they can eat sweet again. It's also a very good trick. Like that.
No more eating, not with the sweet on the beginning. Where does sweet achar hit?
Sweet achar. It's throughout the meal. See, achar in the meal technically is there because what you're eating doesn't have much flavor. It's a simple cooking, so the achar is there to add a little extra if you want some more, and then accordingly you can put more or less. But if the meal is fully cooked, you know, it means with all spicing like that, technically achar is not part of the meal. You know, unless it's lemon achar and you're using it for digestion. But these other spiced achars are generally because the spicing is simple on a daily level. So the achar is there to add a little bit more flavor.
I noticed that they often serve achar before sweets.
Achar goes with the salties.
But they serve it after everything is served, then they serve achar.
No, that's chutney.
Chutney is different.
What's the difference between a chutney and an achar? An achar means you take the vegetables and you pickle them like that. You know, so they're either pickled. Generally, it's definitely salt, but some may use sugar or a lot of sugar and spices, so depending on what it is. So it can be a combination of, it's either pickled just in salt, just in sugar, or just in oil, and then the others will just be given a little bit for taste, like that. And then accordingly you put spices and all that. So that goes, that's what we're talking, that goes with the meal to give more flavor. Chutney is there for digestion, because it's made of those things that improve digestion. So that's given after the salties, before the sweets. So depending, you can either eat it straight or eat it with rice, depending what it is. But that's for digestion. It's interesting what the questions end up on.
Vegetable soup.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying what actually generates the question. Like they're going through this whole thing on Krishna's, you know, description and beauty and all that. The question is, can we dress like that? You know, or we're going through all the things on pure, unalloyed devotional service, how the person is beyond Varnashram, and all our questions are applying Varnashram in our life. You know, so it's interesting how the, so one can understand our level of advancement by that. Okay, what I was pointing out is that in the summer it's all nice palatable things that'll be there, so you know they're tasty, that's what you're looking at. In the rainy season then you're looked at things that are wet but they are full, like that. You know, the richness is there, the fullness is there, but it's a balanced. The other one is more the taste, so snacks, different things like that. And it says tasty condiments, so there's little tasty things on the side to add and do things with. Right, because the rainy season, it has a different effect on eating than it does the summer or the winter. Right. Also here is you're using pure warm water instead of just cool water. In this way, they serve Lord Sri Hari according to their ability. During autumn, the devotees serve Sri Hari exactly as they do in the summer. Right? Because it means basically here is the overlap, or the autumn is overlap of rains and the winter, but you see it's hot. So it's the same kind of things. So you can still, you know, that which will keep you cool and those things like that is what's nice. During the winter, they put a fire inside the temple room, and they sometimes take the Lord outside to enjoy the morning sun. They bathe the Lord with warm water, dress him with soft woolen clothes and opulent outfits, offer him newly grown rice, and offer him incense according to their ability. Right, so here then, warmth is the element, and those things that keep warm. Right, so the production of fire and all that, so they would use that before. Now we just stick a heater in there, right? So, but it gets the same effect, right? Warm water is used in the bathing. The clothes will have woolen, but soft wool, not, you know, like what you're sitting on kind of wool. In the spring, the devotees take the Lord on procession to a flower garden, offer him drinks made with honey, decorate him with fragrant flowers, offer him colored powders and a garland of forest flowers. So the spring, all the flowers that come into season, right? So that's the nice thing, going out, going, you know, because spring is that everything's happening. So going out is where things are nice. Winter is basically inside, except for if you can get some good morning sun where it's warm, like that. Rainy season, you have the both inside and occasionally out, but most everything happens inside. So you sit in, eat nice things, you know what I'm saying? So you can see is each season has it's something that stands out. So the winter, it's a nice warm thing, things that make warm, like that. In this way, they serve Sri Hari according to their ability. Like a wife who constantly serves her husband, the devotees serve the lotus feet of Sri Hari with attachment, affection, respect, honesty, humility, and eagerness. The Lord is constantly served by this pure-hearted devotees with love, affection, respect, attachment, and devotion, just as if he were their own sons, their friend, their wife, their husband, their bona fide spiritual master or benefactor. In other words, as you would someone who's very dear, how you would serve, that's how Padasevan is performed. You know, what would things would make it nice for that person who you have affection for? That's the idea. Yes.
So in this explanation, it means there is no question of cold or snow.
Cold or snow.
This means that
that's a bigger fire. And you don't go out and get some pleasant morning sun.
But is it because I remember that Shri Prabhupada explained like it's like demoniac cold?
You know, something like that. Well, it's not so much demoniac cold, that's just where you basically where either the sages live and doing their austerities and meditation or the animals live. So you just judge whichever you like. Meditation means on the Supreme Lord.
Yes. Mm. But like in Krishna book, there is never snow.
No.
In the spiritual world, there is, I assume.
Maybe in the mountains there are, but, you know, it's there. It's something that's been heard of, but it's not one of the standard pastimes of, you know, making snowmen and throwing snowballs at each other and skiing and snowboarding and stuff like that. So that means in the spiritual world, and it's always, you know, pure powder, you know, it never gets wet or anything. There's no trees or rocks in the way. There's no avalanches, you know, this way. No? That would be the spiritual form of like that. No, you don't even hear of it in the heavenly planets that it's a big deal. You know, it's there. The sages live up in the here, so they live with snow and ice and all that. You know, but they sit out there and, you know, in their kopans doing meditation. You know, that's what they do with it. Yeah. So in other words, when it gets that cold, make sure the Lord is quite warm. That would be the thing, you know. So anything that's warm, you know, keeping the air warm, nice warm clothes, warm food, you know, things like that, that would be the consideration. Like that. Is that okay?
Just reading this paragraph, first of the description is like a wife who constantly serves her husband.
I was waiting for that
one. At the end it says, there, have you served as their wife? So it says, like a wife who constantly serves her husband, and at the end it says, the Lord is constantly served by granted devotees.
What's the common point between sons, friend, wife, husband, spiritual master, benefactor? What's the common point?
Affection.
Affection. So it means with that kind of affection. It means, in other words, the guy will serve his wife like that, but he might not serve the Lord like that. So how he's serving, that affection that's being shown, that's what should be projected, the deity. So it's to give you some idea of something that you can relate to, an aspect of affection, and then that's how, in other words, how considerate is one. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say the man goes traveling, right? He has some work or something, and he goes to some, you know, exotic place for his work. He's there for the work, right? So he can't really go and enjoy himself there because the wife's not there, right? But since he's there, when he gets back, what does the wife expect? Present, right? From that place, not something she could get down at, you know, the local store. It had to be something exotic that's rare from there. So he has to be conscious to be able to do that. Because it doesn't just happen. Right? I mean, of course, airports make it easier and easier these days. But, you know, the concept is he has to be conscious. So wherever he goes, whatever he does, then he thinks, you know, is this something, you know, he goes to the market, there's something new in the market, so he'll buy that for the Lord. He goes traveling somewhere, he sees something nice, he gets that for the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So he's always considering what would be nice for the Lord. Does that make sense? That's the point. Yes?
Garland traditionally would be offered all year.
Yes. Yeah. Because you have different seasons, you have different flowers. So generally there's always something. But, you know, you do the best. It means in India, you know, in the tropics, you'll generally always have something. But when you're outside the tropics, then, you know, you have to do the best you can. So it may not be local. Does that make sense? You know, unless, of course, you make a tundra garland or something. You know, like that. Sure, you could. In this world, the Supreme Lord Madhusudana is not controlled by gold, diamonds, chamara, sandalwood paste, flower garlands, attractive dresses, sweet rice, or drinks. Rather, he is controlled by his devotee's spontaneous, undeviating, loving devotion. Right? So that's the point. All those things that were mentioned, the emphasis wasn't on opulence. The emphasis was on making nice arrangements. Right? That wasn't the focus. So he's pointing out, so even those things you're offering, even those won't control him. But it's that loving devotion, right? Undeviating, spontaneous, there's just that consistent devotion that's there. So these are all the mediums of expression, right? Because what's been mentioned are things that would be in consideration, right? If it's cold inside, then going out in the winter in the morning sun, that's pleasant, that's nice, it's a consideration. Right? You know, it's hot, so you give cooling things. It's cold, you give warming things. Right? The rainy season is nourishing things. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Yes?
Whereas the items which are restricted in Chaturmas, are they in the same consideration?
Means?
Milk.
For the Lord, it's fine. Just like an Ekadasi, grains are fine. See, these are specifically ones that it is proper for the health, but it is more of an element that Kartik, there's an increase of passion, right? So you see, is that the festival itself is a more romantic festival. You know, the lights, the this, the that. Now, the point is what's restricted in Kartik? Uridol. So what's the difference in Uridol and other dolls? More protein. It's more strong. So those things that will create on itself more passion is restricted. So in those other seasons, those things, spinach. What's the thing about spinach? That's also the Shravan Mas. That's also a nice festival month, and everyone goes to Vrindavan. It's got that more pleasant because rainy season's just begun. You understand? But spinach is very powerful. Of anything that there is, it has the most amount of protein. Right? So that's restricted in that month. And then the milk and yogurt, and they're also very enriching, but the yogurt also has that element it can create lust. Right? Because it's the transformation of milk, so it represents Shiva. Krishna's milk, so yogurt is Shiva. Right? So Shiva, then your false ego, your bodily consciousness, all these things can come up from that. So in that season, you eat that it may generate that as a problem. So as a sadhaka, then these are considerations, but for the Lord, they're not. Does that make sense? Main difficulty in the yogurt time, I've also noticed that the yogurt doesn't turn very nice for them. Spinach at that time generally is full of bugs. You know, somehow or that's the, maybe it's also, it's just that's their season, they get to eat the spinach. While we get the other 11 months, they get that 1 month. You know. So there's all, when Krishna does something, you know, you get all these considerations. It all works out. So. But it's still the same zodiac signs and houses of the planets are going on. Like I always noticed that there was a particular month. I don't remember, maybe it was this month. Before I used to know the month that by the house and that, then your teeth would have problems. So if it's not a major thing, they just hurt this and that, after the month goes, it goes away. But if there's a problem, then it'll be. So I noted, because every year the things would come at that time, and that's that. So when I happened to be in America at that time, I noticed also the same thing happened. The amazing thing is that's the exact month when all the dentists go on holiday. So I guess when they come back, there's some serious problems. Because if they stayed, it would be a minor problem, right? You know, but if they come back, you're definitely going to go see them by then. It's a really good problem. So I don't know. I don't think they planned it that well, but it's just kind of funny. So the signs are the same. So the influence of the planets don't change. It's just that, because what you have to understand is that all the weathers that are in the world are in India. All the landscapes, everything. If you've ever gone around, there's no landscape anywhere that's not in India. It's just where you see it. Because most of those don't go everywhere either. You know, it means like all the coastal, all the Mediterranean, so when you go down to Goa and all those places, it's exactly like that. Lifestyles like that. You know, you go up into the, you know, Himachal and those places, those states, the northern states, and it's like this, you know, the western more in the mountainous regions like that. And, you know, so you have your plains, you have your rolling hills, Madhya Pradesh, you have your ravines and all those kind of things, but most people don't see those. You always drive above them or below them. I don't think I'm not sure. Oh, you know, I once went. Does that make sense? So all the different things, all the weather, all the kinds of people are here, right? You have, it means you have, you know, in central and south, you have the, you know, very dark, very strong, like that, powerful, because the Dravidians are a degraded remnants of Kshatriyas. That's why they're very ferocious. You go up into the northeast and they look oriental. You know, you go to the northwest and they have that kind of Middle Eastern look. You know, you go to the north, like that. So it's all the different kinds of people, the lifestyles, the weathers, the foods, they're all represented here. So it's not that it wouldn't apply. It's just that people don't bother with it anymore. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, instead of, yeah.
Yeah.
adjustment, saying that the principle is just to reduce sense gratification.
It is to reduce that, because at that time you would be more, tend more towards it, because the rainy season is the time that if you're doing like health treatments and that, that's the best time, because the body replenishes itself at that time. Because as we discussed yesterday, is water is the common element between the gross and subtle body, right? And so nourishment means, you know, liquid, you know. So the point is that that's the rainy season, so the water is there, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's not too dry. You know, so it's a very good time to replenish. But one should do that not by things that are overly going to create passion. Right? So a pleasant, regulated lifestyle with a focus on the Lord instead of on your senses like you would tend to do, right? If the body is sick, just not, let's say, too sick, but a little bit sickly, or not so fit, then it's very easy to think of the Lord. But if the body's very fit, right, the tendency is to not so much think of the Lord. Right, so the idea is that the body tends to make itself more fit in that season. So you also then have to control and see that instead of thinking of the body and those things, you think, because you can't go outside so much also, so then, does that make sense? You just get into a lazy lifestyle. So therefore you get busy with sadhana. Right? You know, so it works out. Does that sound? Therefore, simply by his desire, I will serve his lotus feet, either at home or in the forest with various opulent ingredients, or with easily available flowers, fruits, and water. Right? So, that's the idea, is that he's not impressed by these things. So it's the devotion. So with devotion, I'll try to offer all these things nicely. It's not that, oh, these things don't impress him, so therefore we don't offer them. No, it's that these are offered, but you want to see that it's offered with devotion. Like that. The focus has to be there. Only the less intelligent people of this world perform sacrifices to serve the demigods, who are situated in the heavenly planets. Intelligent people serve the kind-hearted saintly devotees, who are directly empowered by Lord Krishna, the master of the demigods. Whether devotional service to Hari is present in the heart or not, one should serve the saintly devotees. If devotional service to Hari is present in the heart, one will attain service to the saintly devotees. If devotional service to Hari is not present in the heart, then by serving the saintly devotees, one will attain devotional service to Lord Hari. Right? In other words, by serving the devotees, one will develop affection for Hari. By serving Hari, one will develop affection for the devotees. Because the Lord's always surrounded by his devotees, so there's no question of serving him without the devotees. By constantly serving the lotus feet of great devotees, one's heart becomes purified, one's association with material existence is totally uprooted, and one obtains the treasure of loving devotional service to Sri Hari. The particles of dust from the lotus feet of great devotees are the cause for receiving devotional service to Sri Hari. Those dust particles are like fire for destroying sinful reactions, and the bridge for crossing the material ocean. The broad-minded devotees serve the lotus feet of the Lord by prescribed activity. Dust particles are like fire for destroying sinful activities. So the particles, that means by serving, then one gets that proper understanding, knowledge, because knowledge is what burns up material desire. Right? Material existence is burned up through knowledge. Right? So by serving the lotus feet of the devotees, then one gets that proper understanding. Right? Otherwise, it's just academic. So if the knowledge is not applied as service, then there's no realization. If there's no realization, there'll be no desire for further learning. Right? Like you see, someone comes, they're very interested, ask all kinds of questions and this and that, very satisfied, then they go away, you don't see them again. Right? Why? Because it's not applied. It was only questions. So with service, then there's realization. Then you want to know more. Right? So that combination, that will continue. And then the material existence will be destroyed. Right? And that knowledge is what will cross us beyond the material ocean. Right? The broad-minded devotees serve the lotus feet of the Lord by prescribed activities. In this way, they become peaceful, purified, and worship the lotus feet of Sri Hari, which are controlled only by love and affection. So by prescribed activities, it's not, when it's saying spontaneous, it's not whimsical. You know, they're following the prescribed duties that Rupa Goswami gives, the 64 items of devotional service. So this is the elements that they do. They're doing them to please the Lord. So does that make sense? It's a focus on, you're following the rules and regulation to please the Lord, that's padasevana. Right? The focus is on nicely performing the regulations to serve the Lord, that's archana. Does that make sense? No. Let's take two situations where you're interacting with a group of people, right, in a relaxed manner, right? You meet a group of friends, right? There's no special occasion. So what do you think about? You know, what to do, what to have fun, what to, like that. So arrangements are there, but arrangements are simply in connection with having a good time. Right? Now let's say you're having an actual, you know, formal party. Right? So now you're still making arrangements that everyone will have a good time, but your focus is very much on how nicely the arrangements are made and executed. Does that make sense? But still, the end result is everyone comes together, they have a good time. Does that make sense? It's where the focus. Or let's say you have a business lunch, right? So the focus is on the discussions, the presentation of yourself, your interaction as a person, right? Impressing them as a person. Right? But you go to a nice place and order good food and, you know, things like that. So there'll be those on the side, but that's not the focus. Now let's say you're having a business, you know, convention. Right? Same thing. It's still going to be the same networking, but the difference is the arrangements, how nice the arrangements are. That's what makes the thing, you know, more, you know, sets it apart. You know what I'm saying? So, you understand? Same thing, but it's where the focus is. So, padasevana, the focus is on how to make it nice for the Lord, and archanam is how to make the arrangements and all that properly according to the rules. But both are by prescribed activities. But it's just where the focus is. Right? So, archanam means it's a bit more formal. Right? And well, padasevana is a little bit less. Right? But it's still the same field. Does that make sense? Like that. But here also you see is a lot is put into the paraphernalia, while the others put more into the ritual itself. You know, paraphernalia, you have a nice palanquin, he goes out on a festival. So it's the paraphernalia. So then comes the devotees. So that's why it ends with serving the devotees. Right? Does that make sense? The worship of the deity form of Sri Hari. 7. The author now describes the process of archana. To properly worship Sri Hari with 16 ingredients according to the rules and regulations is called archana, right? So immediately, the other one was how to make nice arrangements, right? Well, this is then how to worship with 16 items, right, according to the... Worshipping Krishna with opulent ingredients for his pleasure by those attached to this activity is known as padasevana. Right? So that makes a padasevana. Now, worshipping with 16 ingredients according to rules and regulations, that makes archana. Right? Intelligent persons no longer perform Vedic sacrifices to please the demigods. They simply worship Sri Hari with love. Though they do not worship the demigods, sages, forefathers, human beings, or other living entities, all these entities automatically worship them. See, what's mentioned here, those five, those are all the ones that you have a debt to. Just by being born, you have a debt to these five. The demigods, sages, forefathers, human beings, and other living entities. Right? So, when we say we don't have a debt to anyone, we mean these five. And when we say we don't have to follow all the rules, we mean the rules connected with these five. Means of the debt. Right? Means your... The demigods, then you have to perform the yajnas and all that to go with them. You have to respect them. And technically there's 33 million, so you have a lot of work to do. Right? Like that. The sages, because knowledge and all that. So you have to worship them by studying, going to Gurukul, doing all those different things. That's your debt to the sages, is taken care of by that. Forefathers, you're born in that line, so there's some element that's there that they've arranged. You're born in the family today, but the family just didn't, you know, come out of smoke like that, you know, unless you're a Wiccan family. But then most likely you go back thousands of years, so you can take your lineage back, you know, like this. So then your position is based on what the forefathers did. You know, what the grandfather, the great-grandfather, they did all those things. So you owe them a debt. Human being, just your effectiveness in gaining your facilities is in with other people. Right? You're there, you go in and you take your nice hot shower in the morning. Right? But why is there a hot shower? Right? That means the plumbers and all that, they put in all the arrangements. There's the people that work down at the municipality's water board are seeing that the water is coming like that. Electricity is seeing that that's coming. Somebody worked in the factory to make your hot water heater like that. You know, you're working at a job. So many other people are there. The guy's running the business that you could work at so that you can make your money. So, in other words, the whole thing goes on. You understand? So you owe something to people and all other living entities. Means... Your vegetables grow because there's little microbes in the soil that, you know, eat whatever's there, and then the plants eat them, right? You know, so, you know, all these things, there's unlimited things that go on. You know, your yogurt is there because there's bugs in it, right? Not big bugs, you know, it's very small ones that you can't see. But does that make sense? So everything's going on by living entities. Right? The weather is there, it rains, like, you know, it's always raining in Brazil because there's trees there, right? No trees. It doesn't rain in Arizona, right? Why? Because there's no trees, right? So therefore you have a debt to the trees. Does that make sense? Yeah? So all that is what the devotee doesn't have to take care of. So since we don't know this, this is an ocean of rituals. Right? Then we only have to chant and do all those basic things that Prabhupada's given us. But because we don't understand all these other things, we simply see what Prabhupada's given us as rules and regulations and rituals, because as a Malecha, we wouldn't even follow that. So, because we don't follow the rules, we don't have to follow what Prabhupada gave us. And that's the meaning of the devotee is beyond the rules. Right? So that's what's called misinformed. Yeah.
All these entities automatically worship them. So is it like vice versa, that they are then indebted to us?
Means if you're connecting things to the Lord, that's the whole purpose of existence. Therefore, then that is, they are providing everything for the devotee. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So instead of, you know, the tree is giving the facility and you owe the tree, the tree is giving those facilities out of respect for the devotees. Like that. Same process will go on, but the devotee won't think, yeah, I'm so great, all these mangoes are here because I'm so great. You know, like that, they'll take the mangoes and offer them to Krishna. Because they understand is all this is comes from Krishna, it all belongs to Krishna. Right, yeah. Yeah. So when you see yourself as servant of the Lord, then everything serves you. If you don't, if you think you are the Lord to be served, you owe a debt to everybody else. Right. Whether devotional service, down here. Okay. Such intelligent people can sufficiently satisfy the three worlds. The Supreme Lord Sri Hari is the supersoul of the entire world and the original cause of everything. It is not, therefore, at all wonderful that the three worlds are automatically satisfied if he is worshipped. Just as the decorations on one's face are automatically seen on one's reflection in a mirror. Right? It means you please the Lord, since he is the creation, then therefore the whole creation is satisfied. So by pleasing the Lord, then you're satisfied. Yeah, and everybody's satisfied with the devotee because he's satisfying the Lord. And with the Lord being satisfied, then they're satisfied, so they're naturally satisfied with the devotee. They may not make the connection. They just find the devotees are nice, but they won't know, understand why, but they appreciate it. The members of all the varnas and ashramas may take initiation and worship Sri Hari according to the rules and regulations prescribed in shastras. I skipped one? I did. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. Her blessings are sought after by the demigods, and she is worshipped throughout the three worlds. She personally takes shelter of a person who worships Sri Hari, who is the ocean of nectarian bliss and is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. The lotus feet of Sri Hari are sought after by great yogis. Those who faithfully worship the lotus feet of Sri Hari become liberated from the bondage of their fruitive activities, and they attain the ocean of transcendental nectar, which lies beyond the ocean of material existence. Right, so in other words, people are looking for facility in the material world, right, which means it's based on Lakshmi, or freedom from entanglement in the material world. But both of those automatically come to the devotee. So one doesn't have to separately endeavor, one simply just has to worship the Lord. Right? So then the members of all the varnas and ashrams may take initiation and worship Sri Hari according to the rules and regulations prescribed in the Shastra. Right? So for the devotees, then everybody can be involved in the Lord's worship. Okay, so that. Okay, so the rules and regulations are not given here, but those who would have studied them would know what they mean. Yes?
All right. Can I try to price our discussion from the previous chapter on the...
Because this one didn't, not much came up, so it was pretty straightforward, just play, do the deity worship according to the rules and worship Krishna and nobody else and everything will be fine. No openings for any... Yes?
We established about worshiping actually the deity, but now I recollected that in Prabhupada Shikshamrita there are few letters, maybe two or three, in a section of deity installation where Sri Prabhupada writes to some leaders that you just establish governing Kali in this hall or some kirtan hall, not just to worship, they are satisfied simply by kirtan.
Yeah, but that is the worship. So that means then they're going to get up in the morning, they're going to have kirtan, they're going to, you know, chant their japa, which is kirtan, they're going to have Bhagavatam class, Guru Puja with his kirtan class, which is kirtan, right? They're going to take prasad, you know, like that. And then they're either going to do more kirtan there, they're going to go out preaching, right? Doing kirtan, book distribution, right? Then they're going to come back, there's going to be the evening kirtan. Right, there's going to be some, you know, some discussions of the philosophy there, reading a Krishna book, going to bed. So they're satisfied. So if that's what you're going to do, great. But if it's not, you know what I'm saying? In other words, if it's, yeah, you understand? That's the whole point. But since they're there, it doesn't mean somebody's not going to bathe and dress them.
It just means the whole, the all so many details aren't important.
In one letter, Prabhupada wrote, they don't mind if they are not dressed or something.
Yeah, but then you have to have deities that they are dressed. You can't see is that deities traditionally always have clothes on them.
Yes.
But our own devotees then developed this. As I think specifically Omkar and others followed Omkar, I think Shitala, like that. In other words, the whole French connection. It's like that. Of course, like this has to do with, you know, haute couture, like that, right? So then they created these deities that have no clothes on. Because otherwise, before that, you always have clothes on the deities, right?
Fixed clothes.
Fixed, yeah, it means it's they're carved on or they're made with clothes. Like if you look at older deities, then they're fully dressed. You know. Yeah, they're all fully dressed. But after a certain time, because Omkar is there in Vrindavan, and devotees are making deities in Jaipur. So he would go, and because they get in the way of nice dressing, you know, the style how he dressed, then he would cut out all the clothes. Right? And so that's kind of become the standard. So devotees think that's normal. But if you have deities that are already dressed, then they just sit there. Then you don't worry about it. As long as it's the kirtan and all that's going on. But if they're not dressed, then you have to dress them. Right? It doesn't mean you don't wipe them down or something, you know, like that. You're taking a bath, so why shouldn't they get something? You know, the deity room is clean, everything. Because before, the whole temple was spotless. You know, you could eat off the floor in the hallway. It was that good. You know, now you're not even sure if you want to eat off the plate. You know? You know what I'm saying? So the basic principles, and then they're preaching, then that's fine. Right? So it's not an excuse that, oh, we don't have to do much worship. Right? Because, in other words, you can't take the definition of kirtanam and apply it into archanam. Right? We saw that there's different moods. Though they all are encompassing the same items, there's a different mood. So if the focus is simply on Shravanam Kirtanam, then Gornitai in that situation would be fully satisfied. But don't try to bring that into Archanam and saying, oh, see, we don't have to do all this. You understand? In other words, is it that we don't have to do these things, or we have to see that we're really absorbed in Kirtan? Does that make sense? So if that means that your deities need clothes and that basic thing like that, and if all day you're having kirtans and preaching and all that all day and that's it, that's what the devotees are doing, then you could get by with minimal worship.
Right. Because then in that system, Prabhupada establishing the sandwich, the bhakti and the gita and the preaching in the middle,
yes.
You didn't have time for anything else. No. It's very minimal.
Yeah. Well, because Prabhupada's idea was the Bhagavat program, that would be the program of ISKCON. You know, but as that wasn't the qualifications weren't enough, therefore the Pancharatra was introduced more specifically. You know, rather than just some general rules, then it was more specifically introduced. And when that didn't fully encompass everything of the devotee's needs, then the Vedic and the Varnashram was more specifically then talked about. You know what I'm saying? Because Bhagavat means you're fully absorbed in hearing and chanting all day, so you don't need to do anything else other than, you know, take a bath, sleep, and eat some prasad. Like that. So, everything's done. But otherwise, then the life has to be regulated. Pancharatra regulates the life, you know, in the sadhana. It's like regulated Bhagavat to make sure that you're doing. So, you come back in the evening and they could say, oh, I'm so tired from Sankirtan. But on the Bhagavat platform, you just come back and do more kirtan. So the Pancharatra sees that there's an evening arctic there. Right? You know, that makes sense? Because the idea is that if the sun goes, you want to do something then. That's when you get active. You know, all the animals are all active at that time. Right? Then they go to sleep. So you have kirtan like that, some prasad, some you know, gita, and then go to sleep. Right? So it just follows naturally, right? But Vedic means that it will regulate your social life and your occupation. Right? Because in the beginning, the idea was is there would be no, you know, social life and occupation. There would just be the preaching. You know, but as it goes, then, you know, all those things expand. Does that make sense? So that would be the thing, is that in the temple, you don't need the Varnashram, because everyone's just engaged in the Bhagavat and Pancharatra. And for everyone outside the temple, then you have the question of Varnashram. It's not a matter of, Varnashram's not for us, even though we're living outside, we have our job and all that. But we're, you know, a member of the temple council. No, Varnashram is for you. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Then it would be nice if you knew something more about the Pancharatra and the Bhagavad. Yes. Because then opulence is always there. The devotee always engages in the Lord's service. Because the devotee uses everything in the Lord's service, therefore, then she is opulence, and all facility will come to the devotee, and that way then she'll be engaged. You understand? So in other words, it's just so many more opportunities to interact with, to be engaged in the Lord's service. So then the devotee is rendering that service, so then she takes part in that. She doesn't. If the concept is material, why should she stay? Because it won't be interesting to her, right? It doesn't apply to the devotees as much as they see Lakshmi as the Lord's servant. As they see her as their own servant, then you will find she has a tendency to be a bit restless. But in general, because one's serving, she, you know, she'll be back. But when, you don't know. Like that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, for the pastimes they may do that. You know, because Lakshmi is a specific thing also, is that how do you serve the Lord? Through Lakshmi. So if Lakshmi is always residing with you, you're always absorbed in the Lord's service. Therefore, we see the acharyas, whether they have material opulence or not, they always have devotional service. So that means Lakshmi is always with them. Does that make sense? Okay. 8. The process and glories of offering obeisances to Lord Hari with one's body, mind, speech, and the process of offering prayers to the Lord. Okay, so now bandhana. The author now describes the symptoms of bandhana. Offering obeisances to Sri Hari with body, mind, and speech. It's funny, because the music, Oriental music, I mean, you have the things where it's like the, it's kind of, it's not a xylophone, but it's like that, you know, with the pipes. You get these, you get the notes, but they're an exact, you know, sound. You know, there's no carrying on and all that. Yeah, so it's interesting that the Chinese kid, when he goes around, he makes these clicking sounds and makes music. You know, you don't find Western kids do that. You know, so it's just their music, so they do that. Offering obeisances to Sri Hari with body, mind, and speech by persons who are surrendered to his lotus feet is called bandhana by the learned devotees.
What is the use of cultivating knowledge or practicing yoga birth after birth? It is extremely difficult to practice. By offering obeisances to Sri Hari, to Sri Krishna, people can give up all material activities and attain the supreme destination. If I offer obeisances to Sri Krishna, I will become purified without taking bath in a holy place. I will neither become afflicted by miseries, nor will I become frightened by the punishment of Yamaraj, nor will I be dragged by the fruitive activities into the path of material existence. With their bodies, learned persons offer obeisances to the Lord, who is situated in all objects and full of nectarian bliss. With their minds, they offer obeisances to Sri Krishna's lotus feet, which are constantly manifest in their hearts. With their speech, they offer obeisances to the Lord, who is situated in the heart of all living entities. Right, so the body is offering obeisances, the mind is offering obeisances, always remembering them, and the speech is always offering prayers. Right, so the idea is all three, that's bandhana. Right, not just the prayers, but it's the obeisances of body, mind, and words. Right. The author now describes the process of bandhana. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, which are as beautiful as newly blossomed lotus flowers. They are illuminated due to the effulgence emanating from his moonlight toenails. They are decorated with golden anklets and are as soft as newly grown buds. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Hari, which are as precious as the most valuable jewels, as soft as fresh butter and shirisha flowers, and which are marked with the signs of flag, lotus, barleycorn, rod for controlling elephants, and many other similar markings. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, which are decorated with the marks of a flag. Oh, I've just read that. They are doubly bright because of the rays from the Lord's moonlight toenails and the effulgence from his anklets and jewels. To achieve the highest ecstasy, right? So in other words, he's already effulgent. And now the toenails and the jewels and that make more effulgent. To achieve the highest ecstasy, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, which constantly follow the cows in Vrindavan, and which move slowly due to the pride which is born from his dancing pastimes. Those lotus feet are the shelter of all sweetness. They are filled with transcendental mellows of ecstasy and are served by the gopis of Braja. Right? Move slowly because it means he is generating the pastime. Right, he is. It's his interaction with the devotees that is the pastime. Right, so, and he is exist. So he's fully confident. So it's not that he has to be quickly going here and there because he might miss something. No, he's the center of what's going on. So therefore, he pleasantly moves from one place to the next.
Desiring to understand his lotus feet better, how does the elephant rod work?
Elephant rod works. Meaning? How do you technically use an elephant rod? Depending on what it is, little short ones or longer ones. And then it has one part that's straight and one part that's curved. Right? So the straight part, if need be, if the animal is not responding, you can poke it. Right? And so it will notice. Even though it's got thick skin, it's somehow or another very sensitive to being poked. Right? And the curved one is you hold the ear. It just sits on the ear, and that way you can direct the... When we're nicely trained, by just pulling this way or that way, then the elephant moves. You know, it comes forward or stops or goes left or right, because it just follows... Right? At the same time, it's a long stick, so if they get out of hand, you can whack them on the nose also. Right? Because their nose is very delicate. There's like 50,000 muscles in the nose to make it work. So you whack them on the nose. It doesn't injure them, but they notice it. Right? So, like that. So in this way, the rod controls the elephant. That makes sense? So they're nicely trained. You never have to use it roughly, because they're not stupid. They never forget. So they know you can use it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, because you see the good elephants, the good mahotsi, they're never having this. They just give some commands and pull this way and that way, and that's all. And the elephant does everything like that. But when they're first being trained, then you know, it's like I remember seeing. Now these are Assamese, so they're from north. So they're very expert at taking care of the elephants, you know, the health and everything like that. Well, in south, one of their outstanding things is the training of elephants, so they can do all kinds of things. So he had this small baby male elephant. And so, you know, the elephant would be there facing the mahout would be sitting there, and he'd take it. Rot him out of his, you know, one of the old garlands. He'd hand it to the elephant. Elephant, you know, seeing it, would wrap its trunk around it and start to swing it into its mouth. He'd whack it on the nose, it would drop the garland. He'd pick up the garland and then he would hold it out like this. The elephant would grab it, swing it towards its mouth, he'd whack it on the nose, it would drop the garland. This would go on for days, you know. But like a week later, Then I remember then when, you know, one senior devotee came, then the elephant came up holding the garland and put the garland on them, around their neck. Didn't eat the garland, but, you know. But the mahout, you know, had to sit there for a day, just sitting there, you know, hand the garland, whack, you know, drop the garland, pick it up again, like that, just went on. And so then the elephant figured it out. Like that, and then they gradually it builds, because they don't forget. It's not like us, we'll learn one thing and forget the last thing. They remember everything, you know. So you know, once you get across the point of training, then it's very easy for them. Right? You know, you don't hit hard. It's just suddenly you're hit, and then what? You know, so. And you're small, so they're small, so you're as big as them. You know, so then you know. There's also these tricks like. You're tied with ropes when they're small, right? So they aren't that strong. So the rope is strong enough to hold them. But a rope's not big enough to hold a big elephant, right? But the big elephant remembers that the ropes, it couldn't break. So even the big elephant, you tie it with a rope, it won't break them because it thinks I can't because like that. So that's the whole point. It's just like when you're small, you know, you just a little slap on the hand. It's like so much. It doesn't mean it. It's a shock. So those little things on that small elephant, then they get shocked. So then, you know, so when they're big, then even you hit them like that, that's nothing. But, you know, still, for them, does that make sense? It's just conditioning. So. Because barley, Job is when Yajna was born, barley was born. So that I know of, when Varaha, you know, from Kusa grass also came when he shook his, I think Kusa, not sure with barley, but in the Treta Yuga when the Yajna became the thing, then barley started growing. So it goes together. Barley signifies sacrifice. By meditating and offering prayers in this way, one should repeatedly offer obeisances to Sri Krishna by falling flat on the ground. Remember, before it was meditation. But here it's meditation in the form of prayers. You know, so it's a glorification rather than just a remembrance. Right? So, same remembrance, but if it's just remembering, then it's smarana. If it's remembrance with, you know, saying it in the form like prayer, then that's bandana. By meditating and offering prayers in this way, one should repeatedly offer obeisances to Sri Krishna by falling flat on the ground. He is the ocean of bliss. Sober persons should give up pride, which is born of education, austerity, high birth, wealth, and assets. Considering these things to be enemies, they should offer obeisances to the Lord by falling flat on the ground. Right? So, you know, first thing would be wealth and assets. You know, before devotees, you know, didn't worry about any of these things, right? They joined either, you know, just started college, dropped out, or they were in high school and dropped out, right? austerity, you know, so they would perform, but nobody was worried about it as a separate element. High birth, no one worried about that at all, because generally it wasn't there. Wealth and assets, you didn't have any, unless you counted your BTG box that you kept your dhoti in. That's if you had one. Like that. I think in our temple, I think the underwear was yours. But everything else went in the wash, and then in the morning you just came in a big pile, and you just pulled out, you know, whatever you needed. Like that. So I'm not even sure if we... I think our sleeping bag went in the BTG box, right? Because that was all you had, that and your underwear. I think you had your own toothbrush. But as we see is that we get into the material elements, then wealth, assets, education, being seen as, you know, having social prestige, these things come up. So it's the same thing, right? It's just instead of, you know, hitting you in the face, you know, they turn you around and kick you in the backside. You know, in any case, you end up going that direction. Considering these things to be enemies, they should offer obeisances to the Lord by falling flat on the ground. They should offer obeisances to everyone, including insects, outcasts, hogs, and blades of grass, knowing that all animate and inanimate living entities, from an insect up to Lord Brahma, are energies of Lord Krishna. Learned persons should offer them obeisances. Right? So you're very careful. You don't step on the bugs. You take into consideration all these things. Thus, by constantly offering obeisances and gifts of love to Sri Hari, exalted devotees serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the spiritual master of both animate and inanimate entities. Right, so that mood of just always remembering the Lord and offering one's respects and obeisances, right, with the body, with the mind, and with the words. Right, is that clear? Yes.
Inside bandhana is prayers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the main element is the glorification of the Lord.
I would say it's the glorification, but it's that sense of submission of offering one's, being respectfully offering obeisances. So one does that with the body by falling flat on the ground, by the mind by always remembering the Lord and His glories, and the words by glorifying Him with suitable, you know, prayers. Is that a sense? So the prayer is an element, but it's more that one has that submission. Because wherever one is, whatever one's doing, then bandhanam is always present. Because he's offering respects to everyone, you know, everywhere. While we might just think bandhanam means offering prayers, so when we're in the temple, we may take the effort to learn some extra prayers, you know, and stutis and different things and offer them to the deities, you know, or... You know, when we're getting up in the morning, we say something, or after we get dressed, or, you know, at times when we would be considered, you know, doing something spiritual, but you're not chanting or doing something else. So one might do that. So that's good. But the bandhanam goes beyond that. That even you're walking on the road, you're respectful to the living entities that are there because the Lord is in their heart. Right? So, you know, it's not that every ant that goes by you're offering obeisances and that. It's a whole ant hill going by, they're moving nests, so you're there all day and like that. What happened? You said you'd be here at 9 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock. I don't know, the whole ant hill came out. So, you know, so it's a matter of obeisances doesn't mean falling flat on the ground. It means that one is respectful towards them. You know, and considers that the Lord's in their heart and considers... That position of being the servant of the Lord. That's what's going on. Yes.
So it can be like...
I mean, if you want, you can offer obeisances to the ants. So it's not the problem. Yes.
So we can like compare in a little vivid way, vague way, like kirtan and sankirtan, and prayers and vandana.
No, I mean, yes, it means if you're taking the individual's involvement. But Sankirtan also means that you're performing kirtan with other living entities. That would be there. But at the same time, the Sankirtan also implies that body, mind, and words are always kirtan. But here is prayers, is the kirtan is of course prayers, but here is like specifically you're appreciating
the glories of the Lord. Right? While kirtan is more the expression of the glories of the Lord. You know what I'm saying? It's not that these things can't go on at once. You know what I'm saying? But let's say you're doing Harinam, but you're absorbed in the name. You know, but it's not that you're specifically thinking about the glories of the Lord. You're absorbed in the name. You could be, but it's not necessarily. So that means someone who's doing Bandana would also very happily do Kirtan. Does that make sense? Like that. Because if it's done properly, it is body, mind, and words. So it is Sankirtan. Like that. Does that make sense? But if you're only offering prayers, then that would only be, only the words are used. So whether the body and the mind is also engaged is another point. Like that.
In recognizing the Lord's arrangements in our lives so that we advance in spiritually, is that appreciation of Bandhana too?
Yeah. He's asking if we see within our life the Lord's appreciation of the Lord's involvement in all the different aspects of life, would that be Bandhana? It can be if one's expressing that. You know what I'm saying? If one's just philosophically noting that, then you know that would be more your smaranam or your kirtanam or like this. Or it can be just that submission. Then that's the next one. Would be your how you say dasyam. So you have to just see what's the prominent flavor, because all these nine processes are basically interacting with the same Lord. It's just which aspects are more prominent. Just like in the Shraddha de Prema, all nine are going on all the time. But it's a matter of which one's prominent. So therefore a particular flavor is manifest. So we call it as Nishta or Ruchi or these other things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I ask that because sometimes we find ourselves in a very specific moment of our lives and we stop and appreciate how the Lord has arranged, and you feel yourself like a small entity.
So that would be like Bandhana. Yeah. Yeah. That would be like, because that's what he was mentioning in that last part, is that knowing that all animate and inanimate living entities, okay. Thus, by constantly offering obeisances and gifts of love to Sri Hari, exalted devotee, supreme glory. So that would be there, but I would think that you would be also throwing in, there would be that, depending on what you're doing, the element of also kirtanam, your the aspect of that, because you're remembering the different philosophical elements, like that. But the point is that mood of surrender and all that, then that would make abundant. Because here it's that obeisances. Process of, maybe you could say it is because here the process of glory is of offering obeisances to the Lord for one's body, mind, and speech, and the process of offering prayers. So if one is offering that respects in some way, then that would be Bandhana. I would think that would classify as that. Nine, the glories of the Lord's service in the form of surrendering one's mind, body, wealth, lust, rituals, and religious duties for the pleasure of Lord Sri Hari. The author now describes the symptoms of dasyam. Right? So he's given this an extended definition. Right? The heading is an extended definition, so that everything, nothing's left out. And then it says now the symptoms of dasyam. Right? Because we'll hear dasyam, but we may not count all those different aspects. To offer one's body, intelligence, senses, speech, and religious duties, lust, wealth, and all activities for the pleasure of the Lord with love is called dasyam. Just as all the universes are included in the transcendental body of Lord Vasudev, and all the directions are included in the sky, similarly all the processes of devotional service are included in dasyam. Right?
So that was also, all directions are included in the sky. So there isn't an 11th direction. There's only 10. Right? Similarly, all the processes of devotional service are included in Dasyam. All the 9 processes of devotional service, namely hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshipping, offering prayers, serving as a servant, serving as a friend, and fully surrendering, are present within the principle of Dasyam. Lord Sri Hari's servants always hear the holy names and qualities of their worshipable Lord with love. They glorify His holy names and qualities with joy and remember them constantly. They serve His lotus feet, worship Him, offer Him prayers, make friendship with Him, surrender unto Him, and perform all activities for His pleasure. Sri Krishna's service is rare even for the sages and demigods, headed by Lord Brahma. Those people who serve Him are not ordinary. They are godly personalities and are even worshipped by the demigods. When one obtains this position as a servant of Sri Krishna, he no longer desires independent happiness, peace of mind, or even the position of Brahma. Only those who are always equipoised and who are free from material desires, false proprietorship, and false ego are qualified to serve the Lord. So here's the qualifications here. Free from material desires, false proprietorship, and false ego. Right? Because it said everything. Right? So the ego, then that's your identity. Right? The desire is that within that identity, then your inspiration materially. And then your proprietorship is what you count as yours, you know, your goals. Right? Like that. So naturally, if you give up material desire, false proprietorship, and false ego, you give up false endeavor. Right? But if they're maintained, then there'll be some false endeavor. Right? For the living entities, there is no superior goal, no superior position, no superior profit, and no superior happiness than service to Lord Hari. Quote, "Let me give up all material enjoyments, which are born from illusion, and constantly serve the Lord, who is the Supersoul and the Master of the entire universe." End quote. With this mentality, intelligent persons surrender their bodies, minds, intelligence, senses, and speech in the service of the Lord, and constantly worship Sri Hari with great attachment. Pure devotees always engage their bodies in worshipping, serving, and praying to Sri Hari. They engage their minds at His lotus feet, their speech in describing the glories of His names and qualities, their intelligence in acquiring knowledge about Him, their eyes in seeing His forms, their ears in hearing His glories, their tongues in relishing His remnants, and their noses in smelling the flowers that have been offered to Him. The servants of Sri Krishna offer their religious duties, wealth, lust, wives, relatives, and homes for His service, unless they please Him by all their endeavors. Therefore, devotees should perform religious duties for the pleasure of Sri Krishna, use their wealth for the Lord's sake, offer their desires for the service of His lotus feet, and worship Him by engaging their wives, friends, and other relatives in His service. Right? So, everything becomes connected. So you're taking all that has been described before and now applying it all at once. So whatever element is prominent, that is what is being offered. Right, so you're performing a religious duty, you're seeing it in connection with the Lord. You're engaging the senses, you see it in connection with the Lord. The intelligence is being utilized, it's being utilized in connection to the Lord. Does that make right? So the idea is that all the other ones are all being done with this. Right? So that's taking... Yes. The author describes the activities of the devotees. The devotees of the Lord serve Him with their sinless bodies, meditate on Him within their minds, sing His holy names and characteristics with their voices, hear His names and qualities with their ears, and see His transcendental deity form with their eyes. In this way, the devotees perform all their constitutional and prescribed duties to the best of their ability for the pleasure of the Lord. But they do not consider such activities as work. Right? It's not, if it's being done for the Lord, you know, happily, if you don't feel a burden, it's not work, right? So therefore, the discussions we would have before on obstacles, it wouldn't be seen as obstacle because it's not a burden. It's not work, right? If you're doing something happy, you know, you're not distracted by the other things, right? It means you just, does that make sense? Right? You know, you're sitting on the couch and the commercials come, So you get up, run to the kitchen, you know, get something from the fridge, something else, run back, right? So you don't see it as an obstacle. You're enjoying, because it's just part of, you know, your what makes you happy. So the devotee is absorbed in the Lord at all time, places, and circumstances. So it's never any work, right? Does that make sense? If it's work, then we're following the prescribed rules, like that. And by following for some time, then one develops the taste, and it stops being work, right? As it mentioned, that was one of the qualities of ruchi, is no longer is chanting seen as a burden. You know, something has to be done, or, you know, I have no taste, or anything like that. You know, it comes automatically, naturally. So then this dasya means that no one is just fully absorbed in all these activities, so it's just naturally coming. The devotees can become free from the bondage of karma if they mentally offer all their activities to Lord Sri Krishna. Constantly remember him, regularly engage in the service, do not desire any results, follow the orders of the Lord without any material attachment, and offer the fruits of all their activities to him. Right? So follow the orders of the Lord without any material attachment can also mean the attachment of not following any rules. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the Western mind that they want to be independent by not following any other authority but their mind. Like that. So that attachment, then when we hear of rules, then there's always so many questions about how to get around them. You know? Like that. If there's no sense of religiousness, then one just directly makes the point. But if one has this sense that I'm a religious person, then one tries to find the loopholes. You understand? So that's also an attachment. So giving up all their attachments. So I'm saying following the orders of the Lord without a material attachment, it can be following them for fruit of result, but it can also be following them for anything else. To not follow, then I'm independent. Right? It means the impersonal concept is based on I am independent. Right? And the karma is based on I'm the enjoyer. Right? So I'm independent, that's I'm the controller. And I'm the enjoyer, then that's, you understand? So by that point, follow the orders of the Lord without any material attachment, which means without karma or gyan. Right? Not because you like ritual, or you feel you're religious, or you'll get some religious benefit, or, you know, other benefits, or from the thing of, you know, following, you don't want to follow them. Right? Or you follow because you'll be liberated, any of these kind of elements. And offer the fruits of all activities to him. So it's a matter of you've done the activity, you've gotten the result, but then you take all that and offer it to the Lord. So then one becomes free from bondage by doing that. Right? But that has to be consistent. It's not that you do it once and sit back, as you know, because it's not you go to work once and then sit back for the rest of your life and the money keeps rolling in. No, it doesn't. It means you're constantly doing that. Because otherwise, if you do an activity and don't offer the results to Krishna, you can be bound by that one. Right? So if you're constantly offering, you're not bound. Right? Because even it's just simple. You see it, that he's giving you the ability to do that, and therefore the facility is coming. Just that simple. But you've thought of the Lord and connected to the Lord. One becomes free from that entanglement. And slowly, slowly, one starts to see how the Lord is involved in everything, so that becomes you become more absorbed. Does that make sense? Yes.
You know, very powerfully chosen point by point by point. They mentally offer all the activities. They do not desire any results and offer all the fruits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, means you don't want the results, but you're offering the fruit. Because the jnani doesn't want the results, but there is no fruit. And even if there was, he wouldn't offer it, because he doesn't want it, so he just leave it there. So for him, renouncing the fruit, that's his system. But here it's like, you don't want the result, and the result's for Krishna. you offer it to Krishna. Yeah, so like you say, it's very thorough. Very, very thorough. Yeah, so you don't desire any results, so that means from the sambandha that you're seeing. You're following the orders, so that means you're following the activity, applying the knowledge in that, but without any material attachment, so you're dealing in the moment, because if you have attachment, you're dealing in the future or past. And then the result that you do get from it, then you offer to Krishna. The servants of the Lord are equal to everyone. They surrender their minds to the Lord and engage in uncontaminated pure activities for His pleasure. Consequently, they do not become bound by the ropes of fruitive activities. The great personalities always endeavor to please the Lord with their bodies, minds, and intelligence. Senses and speech. They become fully purified by engaging in religious activities that destroy the bondage of fruitive activities. So, engaging in religious, so the only religious activities that destroy the bondage of fruitive activities can't be fruitive activities. Right? You know, you can't clean mud off of an object with mud. Right? So that means then the only religious activity that will destroy fruitive activities is devotional activities. Thus they serve the ocean of transcendental bliss, the most pleasing Sri Hari, with uninterrupted love. In this way, broad-minded devotees cleanse the contamination of their hearts by the great waves of Sri Hari's service. That they then become qualified to make friendship with them. So now we see is that these last three technically means all of these are going on, right? But there's that. But in these last three, there's the mentality of being always like here, everything is being absorbed in the Lord, right? But it may not be as close as the friendship or as close as the Atmanivedanam. But that kind of principle is there. But dasyam is where you see yourself as a servant. Everything is connected to the Lord, right? Rather than a specific aspect, right? So now we'll see as it goes deeper in the mood, right? What makes that mood? What makes that special? Yes.
This yoga is.
Previous. That's quite a previous. Okay, yes?
Some part of a pastime, or is it some...
Is it a part of a pastime?
Abstract meditation.
Is it a particular part of a pastime?
Because it is like, for example, it seems abstract, it's obvious, and everybody is there. And
it seems abstract. That's why there's Shravanam Kirtan and washing of pots. Yeah, it means when it's not abstract, then smarnam, you know what I'm saying? But what's so abstract about it? Right? The boy sees a girl. How much does he remember? There's one aspect, something that caught his mind. So only that aspect. And that little mood, or that little look, or that some aspect, and that's it. So isn't that abstract? He only saw a smile. That's what just keeps coming. Isn't that? It's like the Cheshire Cat. You know, just the smile is sitting there. You know, like that. You understand? So because that attraction is there, therefore it's not abstract. Because the mind can either have things more full, or just the one particular item. So the yogpit means it's there, the Lord with His devotees. Like that. So that means His main post. So He's there with Radha, and then the astasakhi around in the eight directions. Like that. Because they're the ones, that's where you get all, everybody else comes from that. You know what I'm saying? All the other expansions. You know, all your devatas and your directions, that's coming from that. You know? Does that make sense? All the different energies, the poets, all the different things are attributed to the directions. That's all coming from them, because they sit in that spot. So it's not a problem. Yogpit is the formal situation on who sits where according to
the particular lineage. You know, so who are the major players? Does that make sense? Yeah, so they don't have a problem with the lotus there. How did they get in there? Do they have a problem with the leaf? You know, is it just the right they can lean on the leaf, or, you know, do they have to sit away from the leaf? How far out is the leaf? No, don't worry about all that.
Maybe I should have used formal, because
isn't it formal? Because Yogpit is formal. That's as formal as it gets. That's where everybody's sitting according to their position. Right? Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki
Jai
Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi
Hare Hare Bol